Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Before we get into the podcast, I can't start this podcast before I say, JB, that is a beautiful rugby shirt.
Now, what this old thing?
Yeah, that thing is gorgeous. Let me just rub that. Is that merino wool?
It is merino wool. Guilty. Don't get me wrong. I'm a guy in marvelous shape, but this Egg Chasers fan top, and is also the muscle fit match weight one, actually accentuates what great shape that I'm in.
I could not agree more. It's got a real classic look, that one.
Full hoops.
I love the colour palette you've gone with. Full hoops, obviously. Where can I get one of those, JB?
Maybe it's at the Egg Chasers shop with Akuma Rugby. Maybe.
Which is? No, I can't. Do you know what? It's pinned on our Twitter account anyway, mate. I've got it here. Don't worry about it. I know. I should have known Phil's not here. Right, akumashops.com/eggchasers. There it is, pinned on our Twitter account, at Rugby Podcast on Twitter.
Yeah. Do you think about this? You can look as cool as us.
akumashops.com/eggchasers. Right, let's do this podcast.
All right.
Hello, Egg Chasers. It's the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, a podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. We are here in the rugby dungeon to talk about a fantastic weekend of domestic rugby, to look ahead to an amazing weekend of European Cup quarterfinals and Challenge Cup quarterfinals as well. And well, JB's here. How are you doing, JB?
I'm very well, thank you, Timothy. How are you?
I'm extremely comfy.
Nice in these seats, isn't it?
We're currently streaming on Facebook Live. YouTube. Got there in the end. I'm sat in Phil's chair. This is a double head today because, let's get him on the line, actually, because Phil, let's go live to Westminster.
I thought he was on the Brexit march. Is he not in Cumbria? That's part of their trail, isn't it?
No. He's on the he was on the People's Vote March yesterday.
Ah, is that where you were?
Yeah,
he's the People. Right.
Yeah. So
trying to obstruct democracy, are we, Phil?
Let's go to London, Phil. How was the march?
I can confirm that I was not on the Westminster March.
No, I don't think.
Neither was I.
To be fair, I don't think that you would have fitted in with your yellow vest, with your high-vis vest.
Neither was I marching from Sunderland to Westminster or wherever they were going on the Leave Means Leave march, unfortunately.
I'm sure on the news there was shots of you on the London streets, and you were the one holding the placard that said, in 1933, 17.3 million people voted for Hitler. Very wow. Good. I think it was a fair equivalence to make, by the way, JB, one of the most murderous regimes ever.
That's fair.
People who cast a vote.
So. Straight into Brexit. Wow. What a podcast. Wow. Anyway, enough of Phil's political leanings. How are you, Phil?
I'm very good, thank you, JB. How are you?
I'm in the best of health.
Is this young Thomas's first trip away?
First holiday, yes. Although we've not actually gone very far, only up to the Lake District.
Oh, but you now know how annoying it is to pack for a weekend away with a child, though.
Oh, my God. So, yesterday he was in a very, very difficult mood. So we didn't bother packing until last night.
That's because we might be taken out of the European Union, Phil. You can understand his frustration. Sorry, go on.
Yes, very annoyed. So we didn't bother packing last night, and we had until 11 a.m. this morning to get out of the house. Given that we were up at 7 a.m., 4 hours, that should have been really easy and doable.
You'll learn, Phil.
Somehow, at 11:40, we were still in the house. Nearly 5 hours to get the car packed. Unbelievable.
It's not worth it. It's just not worth it.
It's not worth it.
Anyway, I hope the weekend.
I think you might be. I think you might be right. It might not actually be worth it. But I'm now enjoying a lovely Lagunitas IPA.
Lovely.
So
So this is sort of like a miniature night out for you now.
Very miniature.
Yeah.
Being on the phone to you two and drinking a Lagunitas IPA, hidden away in the bedroom of our B&B, is a bit like a night out, I guess.
That reminds me, actually, we got sent a picture of some people who had Negronis as a drinking fine. That was the fine.
Ooh, grisly. Well, Bill's not the only one on a little night out, because Billy and Ben Taylor were out on the Shandies.
Yeah, they were. By the way, I want to apologise in advance. I am still quite hungover from a night out in Newcastle as well. So, and just in case anyone was wondering, is doing a CrossFit session whilst still hungover a good idea? The answer is no.
So I disagree with you wholeheartedly here. I love working out hungover because it feels so wholesome, like you've done something so bad the night before. And then you go and have a real good workout and your heart is doing two rapid beats and then there's no beat for 10 seconds and there's 15
I was getting some
more
odd palpitations.
I actually really enjoy working out hungover, which is odd. But yeah, it's one of my things.
Yeah, Ben and Bill. Bill and Ben.
So what are we accusing them of here?
Well, all that's been reported is that they got back later than the rest of the squad from a night out after the Scotland game.
As adults?
Well, there is no curfew. Yeah. There is no curfew.
No, so they've got rules, haven't they? So you've got to all come in together or something?
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's, rather than rules, like black and white lines, I think it's just a kind of agreement about the general way we'll do things. We'll travel, we'll go out and we'll come back at the same time.
Interesting.
And it's fairly vague in that sense, which is quite refreshing, actually, when you hear the way football quite often deals with things like this, where they're stuck in the hotel. I quite like that rugby's got a mature, grown-up approach.
Yeah, well, I still have a friend, and he played age-grade rugby league, England level sort of, and he's pretty good. And when they go over to somewhere like, and I think this happens in age-grade rugby union too, probably in some tours, when they go overseas, very, very strict rules. Like you've got to go out together, you've got to come back together. No one outside of the party is allowed inside rooms.
One person bubbles, everybody bubbles.
Yeah. Stuff like that. I just don't really get it. I mean, like, why? You meant to be having fun. Oh, no, sorry. You meant to be a miserable professional. No, you meant to have fun. And they're adults. But apparently they had to apologise for this, didn't they?
Well, apparently Ben Teo apologised, or they both apologised to the team.
Why? I mean, what is the crime here? I mean, they should apologise for letting Scotland draw with them. The fact that they came back maybe a little later than planned, that's not really a problem.
Well, if there was more to the story that we don't know that hasn't been reported, then
let's hope so.
I don't. Obviously, saying I hope so is not what that sounds disingenuous. I hope so from the point of view of otherwise this is a non-story.
Yeah,
I don't care. Like
that's where I am. This does. The headlines were kind of alcohol fueled night out.
As opposed to what? Cocaine? Isn't that a tick in the plus column?
but when you actually go through the detail, so exactly as you've already listed, Tim, there was no curfew. There's no rules around being able to drink alcohol or not. So they can't have broken a curfew. They were allowed to drink alcohol. They just didn't come back at quite the same time as the team. So it's... They have apologised, but for breaking some very vague non-black and white rules, so it's a complete non-story for me.
Yeah, agreed. And also, it's just a reminder that we are so lucky to have a sport where the players are relatable, are actually real human beings, and we get to see that and we get to hear that. So the problem I have with this story, assuming this is all there is to it and there's not more, again, that's the caveat, there may be more that hasn't been reported, I don't know. But assuming that what's been reported is all there is, it's just going to widen that gap between media and players, and they're going to be less and less.
Well, already, giving. I mean, I might be speaking out of turn here, but I'm pretty sure, like, the Italian squad, as soon as they finish a game, they do go out for some beers, but they have, like, places booked, and there is sort of like a managed process of this. So they'll go to a hotel bar, and then they'll go to a club which have already got a reservation for, rather than actually go on the town, which I guess is, you know, it's sensible, really. Mm.
That's definitely sensible. Otherwise, you end up in places like I did last night in Newcastle, a place called Sinners, which had a cage in it.
Wow.
It was... Oh, my God. I was in a world of pain.
Was it a fight club?
No, it wasn't that kind of cage, unfortunately.
Oh, nice. Who did you go out with, Tim? We out with...
Some of the BT Sport lot.
Any names? Any names that you can report?
No.
Go on.
No. They all travel back, actually.
Really?
Yeah, they all travel back, those ones. Great bunch of guys. I just keep having to go. This happened all through university, massively. Like, every time I go out, I'm just there as like a dance monkey dance. Go on, do your downing trick. Go on, do it. So I had to dust that off again.
Yeah, so in case you don't know what Tim's referring to, he's literally got the fastest pint in the world according to Guinness Book of World Records.
I have the official Guinness World Record. I am officially amazing and I have the certificate to prove it. Fact.
Mm. What's the World Rugby Symposium, by the way?
That was a 3-day conference with lots of people speaking about various things. Quite a lot of it safety focused, and I believe, Phil?
It was. It was trying to make the game safer, looking at ways to potentially make the game safer without materially affecting the game, if that makes sense.
No.
That doesn't make sense.
Without materially affecting, it's always going to materially affect the game. Limit the effects as much as possible?
Yes. Hence, without materially affecting the game.
Okay.
Go on.
Well, so it's quite interesting. So, first of all, symposium is a word that I wasn't really familiar with previously.
What does it mean? Conference, isn't it?
Conference of experts, I think it is.
Oh, really?
Oh, wow. Love experts.
So, JB, that's like a red rag to a bull to you.
Yeah. I guess I get offended because when I meet actual experts, it sort of undermines my perceived expertise. Anyway.
So it's a combination of coaches, referees, recently retired players, game analysts, journalists, doctors, sports scientists, and all the rest of it. And they were looking at the current position of world rugby in terms of injuries and concussion with the main focus, and kind of using it as a brainstorming session to...
Don't say brainstorming, Phil. Don't say brainstorming.
Mind mapping potential ways of making the game safer, and as I said before, without having a significant effect on the way the game flows. Now, one of the things they do flag in the World Rugby Report is that there are some positives in this where ball in play time is increasing.
Okay.
Which is a good thing. Now, you would expect that would increase the number of tackles, which it has done, which you would in turn expect would increase the number of injuries and the number of concussions, which it actually hasn't done.
The thought there is that if the ball's in play more, then the body shape that is most advantageous to play elite rugby changes and becomes slightly smaller.
Yes, which hasn't actually happened yet.
No.
I've certainly never ever seen any data which suggests that the size and shape is reducing. But that is actually one of the things that they seem to be looking at a little bit.
Yeah.
So there's talk of trialing some law changes, some law variations.
The average player is 2 stone heavier now than they were in 1987, the first World Cup.
Amazing, isn't it?
A whole 2 stone, which is massive.
Huge.
Yeah.
It is massive,
that's all functional muscle weight, because the skeletons were the same weight. It's just all 2 stone of 28 pounds of muscle.
Yeah, these guys are bloody enormous.
Unless you're Mathieu Bastereau. I would suggest that as well as getting 2 stone heavier, exactly as you just kind of highlighted, Tim, the say 40-yard dash times have decreased, the amounts one can squat, deadlift, bench press have all increased, so everyone is getting bigger, faster, stronger.
Mm. I guess it's links. Sorry, go on, Phil.
So a couple of things they came up with. Sorry, I don't know if this is where you were going for, but I was going to say one of the things they've sort of talked about is the cutting the number of replacements, which we've talked about a number of times.
Well, I haven't.
Six or five, potentially.
I'm not really a fan of that.
I think there's many more things they can do to increase the ball in play time. Things like stopping the clock. But it seems to taking away the incentive to mess up the scrums and be slow at the scrums by having a stopped clock.
Do we really want more ball in play time?
I do, because I think that's the only way you're going to change the body types of players, which is one of the ways that you will decrease the effect of the collisions. But equally, I also think that it will create a more exciting game.
I don't know. It depends what you like. I mean, like, you know, I like reset. I don't like loads of reset scrums, but I like them reset for the right reasons. And I like to see the battle commence, and I do think there's almost a fetish for more skills. Let's get more skills. Let's get more ball and play time. And actually, it's not always that important. I mean, if it was in play constantly for 40 minutes, I don't think I'd be bothered.
No, I'm not suggesting that.
Yeah.
I mean, that is the logical conclusion
of where they want to go, isn't it? It's like, let's have more and more ball and play time.
Not necessarily. It's one way of taking it. If you want, I mean, you could say, let's have a 2-hour game or a 4-hour game. No one suggested that.
Oh, right, okay.
So they're not. This is kind of back to my point originally. I don't believe they're looking for rule changes for rule changes' sake. And I think, based on the people who were there, there is a consideration of the unintended consequences of the laws or any law variations. And one of the, possibly the most reported one of the potential changes was the 50-22 kick.
Yeah,
which is quite an interesting one, I think, because this. So it's not necessarily to keep the ball in play longer, because actually, if you're going to be kicking effectively, you're going to have more lineouts. But it's trying to create more space, and that's one of the things that they want to drive. So if the 50-22 kick, which is similar to 40-20 in rugby league, where if you kick from within your own half and it bounces and it goes out in the opposition's 22, you get the line-out ball. So it's a brilliant way of creating attacking ball. Now that, the intended consequence, because it seems like people have actually thought this through, the intended consequence of that is you're going to have probably three, maybe four players in the deep, which will create more space.
But it doesn't
upfield.
It doesn't necessarily mean I want to have smaller players though, because I've seen this. I thought, that's quite nice. So you've got 11 in a defensive line. Maybe you drop a scrum half as a sweeper. Maybe you drop three back. Maybe you drop four back. Maybe you've got 10. Sorry, yeah. Maybe you've got 11. You know, maybe even go to 10. If I'm facing 10 players, I want my biggest ball carriers, my big Billy Vanapolas and bigger, running at those 10 lads.
Yeah.
If anything, it incentivises me to get bigger lads.
Or suddenly there's a real opportunity to, with some good handling, in the way that Northampton did against Leicester, to get to the outside channels.
Yeah, there is that.
I don't think that is not specifically to reduce the size of players. That's to create more space.
Yeah.
And how teams use that will be different. So some teams might just think, if we're defending 10, we can just bash it up through the middle. I think more would go exactly as Tim has just said, and the Northampton route, which is there is more space. Why don't we have another Cheslin Colby? Why don't we get someone like Perry Baker or Carlin Isles actually looking at 15s?
Interesting.
And why don't we select a Rory Hutchinson type player, classy Rolls-Royce-y kind of a 13 rather than a Matthew Bastereau?
Because you'd be mad?
Yeah.
Because you'd be insane? No, Matthew Bastereau would thrive against 10 men.
I think that one is a no-brainer to, at the very least, trial very seriously.
Trial.
I'm well up for that one, 100% up for that one.
Interestingly, from my limited knowledge of watching, of Rugby League, like a 40-20 or 20-40, whichever way around it is, they happen pretty rarely.
Yeah, but it's the threat of it means that you have to drop players back, which creates space elsewhere.
Yeah, and they do get more points, don't they?
In rugby league as well, you are significantly incentivized not to kick until the fifth tackle.
Yes.
So you really... Yeah, so it's more predictable. Whereas this, you kind of always have to drop people back because it could come first phase, it could be a box kick, it could be any time.
And anything which is going to incentivize and going to mean that players who have that amazing rugby brain and can read matches rather than players who can just religiously do a game plan to a blueprint. I'm all for that. The more that people like... If the game is going to make people like Henry Slade more and more valuable and more influential, that's what I want, because he's the kind of player that I love to watch.
But interestingly, Henry Slade is probably one of the most structured teams in the whole competition, and that's probably why he's so great, because the structure allows him to express himself when he gets in those wide channels.
Yes, but he will play. He will equally play off instinct and spot things that other people won't.
This sort of dovetails nice. Sorry, go on, Phil.
Well, yeah, there's a few other things that were mentioned, so I'll just run through them quickly and give me a thumbs up, thumbs down.
Go on.
So one of them is the ability to review a yellow card. So TMO has 10 minutes to review the yellow card and upgrade it if needs be.
Oh, I don't like that at all. Next.
So I don't know if what they're getting at there is to cut down the amount of time.
Just more punishment.
Of TMA, when they know it's definitely a yellow, but it might be a red, actually, do you know what? Go and sit in the bin and work it out in the next 10 minutes while we get on with the game.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of that.
Yeah.
Oh, actually, when you put it like that, it's not too bad. I'm sort of thinking of...
Exactly.
If it's like definite yellow, we're not talking about is it a marginal, is it a pen or a yellow? This is it's minimum yellow. Can work out if it's a red.
It's going to lead to more red cards, I suggest. But, okay. Yeah, because you're taking that split decision away from the referee. It's not... as bad as I originally thought. I was thinking of it more like we're going to look for more reasons to give red cards.
Yeah,
I don't think that's the intent.
No, I don't. I hope that's not the. I don't. I can't imagine that's the intent.
Is it something to do with jackaling?
Yeah, this is an interesting one. So the headline in the World Rugby statement is "Examine ways to promote a greater contest at the ruck." Now, the way that has been reported in the Times this morning, through Stephen Jones and Sam Peters, is kill the jackal. Now, that's not what World Rugby says, but obviously, I think those two individuals were at the symposium, and we obviously weren't. But
by the way, there are some four-legged animals absolutely bricking it somewhere. Kill the jackal. What?
Yeah,
what?
Exactly.
What's going on?
Day of the jackal, or jackal has had its day.
Yeah.
I don't like that. Intent, I think, because it almost seems at odds to what they're trying to do. Because if the jackal can slow down rugby, could slow down an attacking play, but it also sucks in defenders and attackers.
Yeah.
So it potentially creates space elsewhere. So I worry that if you did that, it's actually going to have unintended consequences that would cut across exactly what you're trying to do with the other law changes.
And this has become a thing because it's now the trendy thing. Now that they've got the high tackles sorted out,
they need something else to go at.
The safety mob needed something else to go at, so it's the ruck.
The ruck has been fine for years, but all of a sudden now it's the Wild West out there. I look at a ruck and I think, I know exactly what's going on here. And it's it's the art of nuance, isn't it? It's like, I know who was doing it the other day. So, well, maybe it's Northampton. They were falling on the wrong side of the ruck, and it was borderline illegal, but it was beautifully borderline illegal. Yeah. And that's what you should be doing. You know, that's the smart thing about rugby. There has to be some element of interpretation about it, and there has to be an element of learning your trade and, you know, being able to do these things. I think when you try and regulate the ruck so strictly, you're going to basically destroy that.
And what I would have liked to have seen here to try and stop those kind of hits that people are worried about, where someone flies in at a ruck and hits someone and risks making head contact, what I would like to see sorted out is get the player who's over the ruck into a better position, because the number of times they're not supporting their body weight, they're just flopping flat and really low on the guy who's on the deck. Well, that you're then giving a letterbox size target for the guy coming in to make a legitimate clean.
Yeah.
So sort that guy's body position out, and that will sort the hits out. This, actually, exactly as you say, Phil, the unintended consequences of taking away the contest at a ruck will be that you'll just have defensive fanning out and it'll...
Yeah, you get rid of the space you've just created.
Yeah, exactly.
And also you can have 20 phases of nothing, you know, just 20 boring phases.
And this is kind of where that is a perfect example of where things currently are. I've sort of had a bit of fun on Twitter this afternoon.
Always.
Wrong
button.
It works. And I agree that there are potentially dangerous and worrying hits being made at rucks. I disagree, but as soon as you say no, I don't want to remove the jackal, people will then go, oh, don't you know people are getting hurt, why don't you care, why don't you look at the evidence? It's like, no, it's all right, I can see the problem. I just have a different way of solving it.
I'm sick of this. So, yeah, it does dovetail nicely into a little spat you got into on Twitter today, which I was kind of watching.
Not really a spat.
Well, I was watching
from my point of view,
with extreme amusement.
Yeah.
And you're right, you know, it's just hyperbolic. People are trying to signpost their way in rugby by saying, look, I am for player safety, as if everyone else isn't for player safety. Yeah. Like, you know, our default position is, you know, we really want injuries. No, that isn't actually what happens. But if you take this safety culture to its logical conclusion, which I have, and I actually think there is a point here. I'm gonna say something now, which I think you're gonna think I'm mad.
So one of the things which sparked this off, just to give a bit of context, I don't know whether you saw it, JB, but Jacques Berger, who, if I had to choose anyone that I've ever met in professional rugby that I would choose to spend time with, he would be right near the very top of that list. One of the great human beings
who's
ever played the game of rugby.
Oh, God, yeah. I would completely skip this. Jacques Berger.
Jacques Berger posted a video of a South African under-14s, under-15s rugby game. And it was a huge hit. And he's actually having people saying that, how dare you post that video? It's awful that you've posted a video.
I mean, it is a savage hit.
It's a savage hit. It really is. And the kid, well, from the, I think some... It's even been reported in the Times even, but apparently the kid was injured. I don't know whether knocked out or I don't know, but I think he was injured. But yeah, it was a savage hit. But to start questioning the morals of someone just posting a 6-second video on Twitter, just don't watch it.
Yeah, don't watch it. Don't watch it. If it makes you physically sick, I mean, I don't do many things that make me physically sick. Do you know why? Because I'll be physically sick. So I don't tend to do it. So here is where I'm going with this. I'm going to say something which I think everyone will think I'm mad or it's not purposely controversial.
Sorry, we're used to that, mate. Don't worry.
Right. If you take this as a logical conclusion, right, about how dangerous rugby is, I think they're probably right. I actually think when you look at all the evidence, you say, is it getting more dangerous? It absolutely is getting more dangerous. And I think it's just responding to market pressures, which is when there are sums of money on the table now, and they're not quite life-changing, but you say they're not life-changing. You try being a 21-year-old on 18 grand and then try being a 21-year-old on 200 grand, and that is life-changing for that period of your life. So, you know, it's one hell of an incentive. So the money's coming into the game. The players are getting bigger. The competition is getting harsher. It's a reality of the game that, and you know, the Sam Peters of this world, and you know, the safety-type campaigners, I think they're absolutely right. I think it's getting too dangerous. However, maybe if you want to solve this and you really want to solve it, you're going to have to take, you're not going to change the rules, you're not going to if you continue to have money in the game at this level, I think you've got a moral question as to, is it morally acceptable to say to a young man, keep putting your body on the line, keep getting concussions in return for this amount of money, which you can't refuse. And I think that's where this conversation's got to go.
But what I don't understand is where, and it's not whataboutery here, I'm actually trying to draw equivalency, not say no, but like UFC, boxing, horse riding.
Well, they would say, yeah, exactly.
I don't understand. That's where I kind of...
Well, I guess UFC is an individual sport. I guess there's still not the money involved in it, which there is now. But if you really, really think about it, if you're on your third concussion, right, and your next contract is
going
to be...
Oh, my God. If I was... I mean, I played at a reasonable level, not elite level. The amount of concussions that I had...
I've never been concussed.
I think there's something structurally with my head, which means I'm more prone to getting them.
Well, maybe you just had multiple concussions and now you're more prone to getting them.
I got so many.
But like
so many.
If you do you think it's particularly moral if you have got you three concussions, you're in your last year of your contract, and you don't want to be known as a player who suffers concussion issues, yeah. would you hide it? Yeah, probably.
I couldn't have hidden it, by the way, because one of my concussions, I was playing for the county, or Southwest or whatever at the time. Anyway, it doesn't matter. I was so badly concussed, I had to call. Well, I got back on, it was a Sunday, and I got back, and in the evening I called who was my girlfriend to ask if we were going out, because I couldn't remember if we were going out or not, and we'd broken up about four days before.
What a creep!
It wasn't a move. She thought it was like a line, and then one of my teammates, who was playing with me, who was in the same team, said to her the next day, "No, seriously, he repeated himself again and again and again.
Yeah.
It was like being with my grandmother with Alzheimer's. Anyway."
Well, like, you know, you say you can...
But now, I think a doctor would have said to me now, you can't ever play again. Yeah, and that was me aged, 19 or something.
Well, it wouldn't be worth the risk. So yeah. I think as an individual... And the other thing is, the pro game, and I can't stress this enough, the pro game has almost nothing in common with the experience of 99.9% of people like me who enjoy rugby on a weekly basis. It's just not similar.
Yeah.
You know, so I do think there's a question to be asked. Is this actually... If you're going down the St. Peter's line of thought, is this a moral game? And I tend to think it might not be, actually. It's a difficult question.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
the incentive for you to hide the thing which could change you irrevocably or, in fact, kill you, if you hide it, you get an extra $300,000, and that might be your child's school fees or the ability for you to fund your pension, which literally is life-changing, or... You know, the way that you pay your mortgage.
Well, the hypothetical that you've just posed is not going to happen.
Happened to Shontayne Harvey?
No. I mean, take the money out of the game.
Oh, God, no.
So, of course.
No, it's not.
So we might as well talk in the realms of what's likely to happen and what is going to happen. Well, you've been sat very quietly just doing your lurking there. You've been sliding into people's DMs there, Phil.
Yeah, what's going on?
I think... JB, you're probably right. If for the people who run that argument, there is an argument to say, well, if you are making the argument that rugby is inherently unsafe and we've got to restrict it so much, maybe the logical conclusion of that argument, I'm not saying I'm on board with that, but that argument is, well, why are you supporting rugby? Why are you following rugby at all?
That's it.
Why are you not calling to ban rugby entirely? Because there is... In my mind, there's no way you can make it safe, depending on your definition of safe, and still call it rugby.
Yeah,
rugby is always going to be... It's going to be an inherently dangerous game. You can make it safer without materially affecting it, and I firmly believe that. And I think the World Rugby steps are... The trials will be interesting to see if they can do that. Mm. And I encourage this kind of thing.
I do think there is an element...
It can be done.
There is an element of people wrestling with their conscience at the top of the game who report this. And maybe that's what drives this. Like, this is a phenomenally dangerous sport. I absolutely love it. I love the contact. I love the collisions.
Yeah.
And now they're sort of like, well, okay, well, how can we reverse this thing which I love? Because we've created a monster and the players are not going to get smaller. It's only going to get more aggressive. And it's a completely different game to what actually we all grew up playing. Completely different.
Well, no, there are... No, I disagree that the players are going to continuously get bigger.
They will, Tim.
I know, I think, well, if you let it, like if you reduce the number of replacements, if you find ways to make the game more aerobically demanding, then you can change that.
I agree with you, right? That, yeah, maybe they get physically smaller, but I bet they never get less powerful.
Aussie rules, body types. Some of the collisions in that sport are absolutely brutal. And the dangers involved and all the rest of it. But their body type is completely different because it's so aerobically demanding. And I'm not suggesting that I don't want to see big hits or, you know, I'm a massive fan of quads. I want to see Beno Urbano's quads.
God,
on
he's
a rugby
a
field.
Beast, isn't he?
Yeah.
I mean, didn't have a great game, but no. He's a beast.
Yeah. And I want there to be a place for Manu Tuilagi because I love seeing the big men.
Well, let's
smashing
be
each
let's
other.
Be absolutely honest about what we love about rugby. Well, what I love, I mean, if you come at me and say, "Oh, I love the skills," I kind of switch off.
I think we just lost Phil.
Phil,
maybe it's all right. That's cool.
Yeah, he's gone. I just sort of lose interest. I love huge collisions and, you know, smashing people and the scrum. And I mean, I remember back in the, I'm old enough to remember
So, you see, there are actually people that think you're irresponsible for going on a podcast and saying that.
Who cares?
Which is the it's
my podcast.
It's the ridiculous place we've got to.
Oh,
yes,
yeah.
I agree.
Heaven forbid, as someone said on Twitter, that rugby gets macho. Heaven forbid.
Oh, yeah, I got accused of being macho. Being massive. Macho.
Yeah, as if it's an insult. Yeah, that would be... That'll be us covering the symposium.
Well, so there's a couple of other things. So there's going to be lots of laws trialled. So they're going to trial in amateur French rugby outlawing a two-man tackle.
Yes, I've heard.
I don't know how you do that.
Oh,
there you go.
There he is. And he's back.
Hello?
Hello.
He is. I was just saying, I'm all for everything being trialled. It'll be interesting to see. They did it in the Championship Cup this season with the chest high or lower for a tackle. Anything above chest height is a high tackle, and they ended that pretty promptly because it led to more concussions. That needs they may well come back and trial that again on a bigger basis, but they are trialing in amateur French rugby outlawing a two-man tackle. I don't know how that's going to work.
And I tell you what else that would incentivize.
Oh, you tackle him. No, I'll tackle him. You tackle him. Oh, we scored.
You're just going to have to be really good at communicating. I mean, it just takes the communication up to next level. It also means that I want bigger players again to run over the one-man tackle and then offload.
Yeah.
With more big players.
The French trials, they've done that. And at one stage, they were talking about junior level banning the attacker using his body as a torpedo. Now, I don't...
What does that mean? You can't run towards the try line that you're trying to score.
Don't know. Don't know what it means. Don't know how you'd officiate it. Don't know how you'd stop it. But
do you know what the coaching point would be out of this ban the two-man tackle? It would be identify the worst tackler on their team and just run at him, because no one else can tackle you you're running at him.
Ryan Lamb would never have had a career. Charlie Hodgson, over.
It would just be run at Ryan Lamb. Whilst Ryan Lamb, or whoever, it's a bit unfair to pick out Ryan Lamb, but whoever.
Hang on. There are games, aren't there? And was it you telling me this? I can't remember who was saying this. Or maybe it's another podcast. And they're saying, like, Ryan Lamb came on. And as soon as he came on, the instructions from the bench were, run at Lammy! Run at Lammy! There you go. But there are definitely weak links, and you are going to be targeting the weak links.
Yeah, that for me is a complete non-starter. It just will not work.
They're trialling it in French amateur rugby, so we will see. Might be fun to watch the odd game.
The only other thing that's maybe worth mentioning about the World Rugby Symposium, and then I can never say symposium again.
Do you remember when dossier was a word? The word dossier was never used, and then it was the Iraq War, and then the word dossier was just everywhere. Now, is this going to be with symposium?
Yeah, well, the other one is compromise, or compromise, whatever it is. I've never heard of that before.
Yeah.
A compromise? Is that compromise?
Actually, another word that was used three times in the 500-word statement from World Rugby was embryonic.
Embryonic.
It's all about these being embryonic law changes or law variations.
The word that was used constantly during the Exeter Bath game today was transition. Never heard the word other than talking about pregnancy and giving birth. I've never heard the word transition used so much.
At least it's better than resourcing the ruck. I mean, that was dreadful. Truly dreadful to describe. When they were saying, oh, they're resourcing the ruck. Now, as a rugby watcher of 15 years, if I closed my eyes and someone said, oh, they're resourcing the ruck, I would have no idea what they were doing.
We need a ruck recruitment advisor.
Yeah.
Well, the other one, the other law change or area of focus on the law.
I'll let you two talk about this. I have to go... and just take a little trip.
Yeah, sure. Go for it.
Go on. So the other one, which Ben Kay wrote about yesterday, I think it was. So it was a high tackle warning program. So this is kind of in line with what we've discussed before about the majority of head injuries occur in the tackle. The majority of head injuries occur to the tackler. And what World Rugby are trying to do is get away from both heads being in the same space. So collision of head or head on head or head on shoulder. So looking at lowering the tackle height, which is what Tim referenced before in the Championship trial. What they're doing with this, the tackle warning program, according to the Ben Kay article, would be so not necessarily looking to penalise or red card where there's been no foul play. But if there is kind of poor technique after the game, retrospectively going to the player and saying, not that you're banned, not anything like that, but look, here is an incident where you have demonstrated poor technique. It worked out okay this time. It might not work out okay in future. And if you collect enough of those warnings, there could be a retrospective ban.
Right. I literally switched off as you were talking then. Not because you're boring, Phil. You're not. In fact, you are very good at explaining complex ideas in a way that gets through to my simple brain. Frankly, like, the whole thing is getting dull now. Like, we've spent 38 minutes talking about a meeting. Like, I can only imagine...
Symposium.
Yeah, a symposium. I can only imagine symposium. How the rest of the world feels about this. Yeah, fine. I'm sure that'll work its way out. Great. Should we talk about the wins and some signings? Because I really don't want to talk about the symposium anymore.
Just on that one, I thought that would be one of the ones that would grab you most, JB, because it actually ticks one of the boxes you previously said for law changes or non-law changes or whatever you want to call them, which is you in the past have expressed your dissatisfaction at yellow and red cards because it punishes teams rather than players. The retrospective banning for multiple infringements on the tackle height. So that retrospective banning, that is a good way of only punishing the player and only making the player culpable, not making the team and the fans culpable.
And what I like about that, and Ben Kay wrote a good article to this effect, to this effect on Saturday in the Times, suggesting that he drew the parallel with speed awareness courses. Rather than just throwing the book and the points at someone, you can go, look, do you know what? You made a bit of a mistake there. Here's a way of correcting your behaviour without actually...
Correcting behaviour.
But what? Oh, no. God. Yeah, I know. What I like... Yeah, it sounds like Orwellian. Sounds like something at a gulag. that's what they're doing in China, apparently. There's millions of people who are going for re-education.
Wonderful.
What I like about it is it actually has the starting point of saying players are not going out to hurt their fellow professionals, which quite often the way that the reaction is, and we talked, and partly this is Twitter, and you know, we talked about the way people talk.
Hang on. Is that absolutely true? Is that a true statement?
What?
That fellow professionals are not going out their way to hurt.
No, in a kind of malicious.
They are. Right.
No. They're not going out their way to injure each other. No, all right. Well, okay, you know what I mean when I say that. You know what I mean.
No, hang on. Are you saying this, or is this in the.
No. So what I like about this suggestion is that there's a bit of good faith and a bit of generosity given to players.
Yeah.
Which the issue is sometimes someone makes a high tackle. Like and then there it's like, oh, that's outrageous. That's disgusting. Yeah. Actually, no, they made a mistake. No, it's all right. Yeah, we can correct this.
Sorry, just to address that point, I don't think players are going out there to hurt each other illegally. I don't think they're going in to throw cheap shots or don't think any of that. But to say they're not going out there to hurt each other,
yeah, of course.
They categorically are. I mean, if you could put on a clean shot and send someone off the field from a perfectly clean shot, you would do it in a heartbeat.
Of course,
every player would.
Oh, I can't believe you just said that, JB. You're encouraging. I can't believe
hard hits. Yeah. That's right.
Yeah.
So yeah. Okay. Fine. Can we move off this now?
Yes, please.
Yes. Harlequins made some signings.
Lots of signings.
So tell me about Harlequin signings. This is far more interesting.
Well, I thought you were the one with the information. You just brought it up. Come on.
Well, I think Phil must have the information because he put it on the running order. Phil.
Sorry, you're breaking up.
No, not now. You put on the running order Harlequins 100 signings.
Yeah, there was a sea of announcements this week from Harlequins.
Yeah, it was one announcement every day, wasn't it?
Every hour for every day. 24/7.
Yeah. And I quite liked how they did it. They had those silly little social media posts, for Campagnaro, it was like a pan and something else. You've got to make out a word of, you know, all these different things. Yeah, it's pretty decent.
So it's a combination. This is an interesting set of signings. It's a combination of a few pretty big names and a few kind of lower leagues and kids players.
Yes. So the one that got me was the Jews who had to fly half.
Brett Herron.
Yeah, I'm not saying he. Oh, he is a good player. He plays at Jersey Reds. You've got to be good, right? So he's come in, but I don't.
So he's going to be an exchange for Catrachelis as the third choice fly half. So we probably don't need to. So I wouldn't worry about talking about him too much because it's.
Well, that's interesting, right?
He's a lot cheaper than Catrachelis.
Catrachelis came in as a starter, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so he was. He's on relatively big money. Came in as a starter, right?
Yeah.
The reason I don't get this is because you've got two young lads in, like, James Lang and Marcus Smith. So I assumed when they went out and got someone, I didn't think it would be a top end fly half, but I thought it might be like, a Duncan Weir or someone who's a bit of an old hand who could steady the ship.
Well, they've done all right with Smith and Lang this year.
But I just thought it was weird to have yet another developmental guy.
I don't know if it is a developmental guy. It's like your third quarterback. You kind of, it doesn't really matter what age. Doesn't really.
So why not keep Tim Sweel for that?
Well,
gone, hasn't he? He was let go last year.
So I just thought it was a bit weird. I thought what they would have wanted there is like an older bloke that everyone could learn off.
Well, there has been rumours around Cipriani, so.
Oh, has there?
That could still.
Well, that'd blow everything out of the water. Yeah. That'd be huge.
So we'll see. But they
would do.
One of Alex Donbrandt's mates from university.
Good.
Another university rig is incoming.
And if he's half as good as Alex Donbrandt, that's going to be one hell of a signing.
Well, when I look at their signings, when I looked at them, and when I look at the makeup of their squad next year, I like what's going on there. They are. They're squeezing value. They're finding the depth in the squad from players who won't cost them a lot, and they're not signing internationals.
I
think it's really smart.
They sort of seem to know who they are as well, which is quite important. Yeah. They're all playing the same way. They had a bit of a blip against Gloucester. But yeah, I agree with you, Tim. I think they're looking great.
But again, it's like, well, you look at Gloucester as well. I think it just goes to show, once again, don't sign internationals. Just don't.
Well, unless they're South African internationals,
especially not in a World Cup year. Just don't sign internationals,
or sign the best player from an international team who the international team don't want.
Yes,
for a cut price.
Yeah,
I mean, if you could do that for every position, you'd be laughing.
Yeah,
but it's very difficult. Who are the other signings? You've got Campagnaro. We've got Brett Herron.
Landajo from the Jaguares.
That's a good signing. That's a really good signing.
Scrum half, and Santiago Garcia Bota. Who's a loosehead prop?
Don't know him
from Jaguares. I think he's about 25, 26, 30 something international caps for Argentina as a prop and a lot of Super Rugby.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple of back rows, a couple of Premiership back rows in Will Evans, who's not done much for a while, but then who has at Leicester Tigers.
He was quite highly rated, wasn't he, at Leicester Tigers?
He was, and he still was. Still only a young lad.
Yeah. The one you're about to say is the one that I think's a brilliant signing.
Go on, Tim.
Go on, Phil, what's that same?
Tom Lorde.
That's the kind of guy I'm talking about. Someone who is, because Alex Donbrandt, I wouldn't be surprised if after the World Cup is involved with England. You've got Lorde in, who has already done a job at Exeter. Rob Baxter said he would like to have kept him, but the salary cap means he's had to make that tough decision. But Tom Lorde is a guy who's not going to be an international anytime soon. He's going to be a really good Premiership player, and he's proved that he's durable, reliable, and a good player, and he won't cost them a load of cash.
I bet they sign him on reasonably good money based on all that, and they realise he's got a bloody Scottish grandparent. Unlucky.
So those two back rows, it almost paves the way for one of their kind of current England periphery guys. I say that in the nicest possible sense. Clifford and Robshaw, one or both of them to go to Bastards New.
So it'd have to be Robshaw, yeah. So it'd most likely be Robshaw. But I don't think Robshaw's going anywhere. He's too important to the club, isn't he? He's like furniture.
It's interesting though. He'll be on England captain money.
So. Well, they're going to be in the Champions Cup next year, so their schedule is going to be grueling.
Can I just say, comparison? FYI, no better time to redo your deal than when you're England captain.
Yep.
For the long term. I mean, if I was Dylan Hartley, I'd be wanting my new deal right now.
Yeah. Dylan Hartley, who's hardly played for Northampton for 4 years.
Exactly. Landaro is a really interesting signing because I think he's class.
Yeah, me too.
So whether really it's good. Just, yeah, what? Maybe they use them like They used Robson and Simpson at Wasps when they first showed up together.
Yeah, because historically at Quinns, the drop-off from Care to another has been pretty severe.
And now they can go at you, can't they, for 80 minutes?
They're the players coming into Quinns. You can just sort of work out from that. There is a lot of players leaving, a lot going to be going.
Yeah, there'll be a few on the way out, definitely.
Some on some pretty tidy money as well. So, yeah, this is it's good times for Quinns. Good times for Northampton as well, who seem to be...
Killing it.
Yeah. I think what I like about Gustard and Boyd, who've done so in very different ways in terms of a squad together, you can see at Northampton, you can see what their squad is going to be like, what their team is going to be like 3 years from now. And what I really like, the cut of both of their jibs, Gustard and
Boyd?
Boyd.
There you go.
And what they're up to. But what's interesting is that they both started the season... We were sort of had big question marks. How's this season going to be? But
I don't think people would call you mad if you said one of those teams would be in the mix for relegation.
Yeah, well,
that's exactly what we said.
That's what was being said early in the season.
Let's just talk about Northampton a second, because I do love that. I kind of love the way that someone's come in. Because they've not signed the players, they have complete freedom of who to start. They don't have to... players.
Jim Mallinder had complete freedom over who to start.
Let me clarify that. Jim Mallinder signed all those guys. So if Jim Mallinder's not paying his top paid players, you then have to ask questions of Jim Mallinder. Why on earth did you tell me to sign this guy on 300K? Whereas Boyd doesn't have to do that. He can literally pick the best players that he thinks suits his team. So he does have a bit more freedom than Mallinder had.
Do you honestly think a DOR picks someone because they'll look bad? They'll look worse if they lose games by making bad selection
decisions.
Well,
because in their mind, they've already decided that they're right because they gave this guy a massive contract. So if, pride's a weird thing. You would probably think, well, he's just not come good yet, but we are spending the money on him. There's a reason we're spending the money on him. Give him another go. Give him another go. And that's what happens.
Pride before a fall, they say.
I'll give you an example. Look at Worcester. Worcester don't rotate the squad. And they basically play the starting 15 whenever they can, who happen to coincide to be the most expensive, because that's what they believe is right. But, it's not right, is it? If you think about it could be right for them. But if another coach came in and that's not his 15, he might pick the best 15 that he perceives in the club. He's just got a bit more freedom.
Mm. So Northampton on Friday night.
Dynamite.
Yeah, so good. And again, I think it's, in terms of, I'm not trying to do a whole downfall 2018 type pie, but you have been very, very critical and very sceptical about Northampton.
Yeah, 100%. I thought they would... Well, you look at their squad at the start of the year, like 26 back rows. They've got so many question marks as to where players were going to fit in, who's going to be the 10, what does Harry Mallinder do? Well, Harry Mallinder's not even shown up. They had like a really mixed bag. And that's what I think Chris Boyd has done great with. He's managed to get those players playing really well. Where he's got weaknesses, he's trusted some of the younger lads. I think he's done a great job.
Not even where he's got weaknesses, he's proactively choosing a lot of these younger guys. But I think what's more as impressive as just using the guys and giving them trust is the confidence that he's given them to just go and do it. You see it, you do it. And he's picked guys and he's got guys with really amazing rugby brains. Rory Hutchinson, he's a Rolls Royce of a player.
He's cool, isn't he?
He's just got... He doesn't look massive, he doesn't look rapid, but he's quick, really quick of mind, and just those hips, the way he can swivel them and get through gaps. Yeah, he's just a kind of...
Anyone else you want to mention as a classy Northampton player?
Classy Northampton player. Oh, yeah. Dan Bigger was awesome.
Dan Bigger. I really enjoyed Wales' second best fly half taking on England's second best fly half.
George Ford was excellent.
Yeah, he still came second.
He was really good.
Well, he's getting used to that now.
He played really well in a dreadful... Yeah, let's talk about Leicester. Yeah. Oh, my word. Because the Leicester drop is potentially on. There's a game on Friday, April the 12th. There's one more round where Leicester host Exeter and Newcastle go away to Saracens. So you would expect neither team to come out with anything in that one, which means there will be a 5-point gap between Newcastle and Leicester going into Friday, April the 12th, when Newcastle host Leicester.
Welcome. And Newcastle can definitely beat Leicester. 100% can beat Leicester.
Yeah, definitely. Don't forget, as I said a few weeks ago, Leicester beat Wasps 3-4 weeks ago. Wasps had a disallowed try in the last second. Had that try not have been disallowed, Leicester would have been currently 1 point ahead of Newcastle.
Yeah. Now, don't mistake this for anything else other than utter admiration and respect for Leicester as a club. I love them. I think they're amazing, what they've done historically, etc., etc. But the mischief maker in me really wants them to go down.
It would be quite...
Because an underdog story...
Oh. Yeah, exactly.
Storyline.
Everyone loves an underdog story, and it's the inverse of an underdog story to see one of the giants, if not the giant, historically of English rugby.
What would be the more unlikely story? Leicester City winning the Premier League or Leicester Tigers getting relegated from the Premiership?
Wow.
Probably still Leicester City winning.
Yeah, you're right.
I don't know.
The salary cap in rugby means that it's more even to start with. But that's where Leicester's issues are. I feel sorry for Jordan Murphy. I don't think he's the reason why this has happened. They've changed several coaches a number of times, and there's been you could probably look back 5-6 years of, when you take it as a whole, really bad recruitment as a consequence of chopping and changing so much.
So, the money ball-y type stuff on this.
Yeah.
As I understand it, a few years ago, the two guys in charge, Simon Cohen, where they saw the value was not developing their own players, but sort of getting those lads who were just graduating someone else's academy and then bringing them in. That's where they saw their value. And then after that, it just seems to be epic mismanagement on signings and where you get them from. And, you know, there's not a lot of trust, particularly in their academy. I mean, Leicester used to be the most dominant team in England of bringing their own through. I mean, you went from whoever was scrum half to then Harry Ellis and then Tom Youngs.
Yeah, I was going to say, in their team now, we've got Dan Cole and Tom Youngs. The players that have come through, Billy Twelvetrees was a... Leicester Academy guy, but they have let some go. Alex Lewington, for example,
let him
go to Nottingham.
So yeah, it's a tricky one for them. I also question this, right? You say it's not Jordan Murphy's fault. I tend to agree with that. You know, in the long term,
these problems the are 5-6 years in the making. Fault. This is 5 or 6 years in the making.
But I will mention this: I was watching Northampton play. And it just looked like they were doing the same thing every time. It was off the nine, a pod of three forwards, and then the pullback pass over and over and over again. And Leicester were completely toothless.
Well, Northampton were you touched on it earlier. Northampton were brilliant at slowing the ball down and playing that borderline game between possibly being illegal but not being caught by the ref, and they were just smarter.
Mm, yeah.
Jay, in that, so I think you're right in that the pattern that Leicester were playing. And in that scenario, what you end up with is George Ford taking the ball very, very deep. Now, what George Ford is very good at is threatening the run and then picking a pass. But when you're picking the ball so deep and the defence can just like amble up and then drift, you're effectively taking George Ford's best threat off him. Mm. It just seems crazy to be trying to play that type of rugby,
but you couldn't play,
when
you couldn't,
it doesn't suit your players.
They couldn't really play any other kind of rugby because the ball was so slow.
Which is a good point, and that's when you're talking about the kind of mismanagement or the bad signings. I mean, when you look at this squad, it almost looks like they've been trying to be kind of too streetwise and money ball, and thinking, look, if we pick kind of 4, 5, 6 potentially explosive massive back rows, one of them's got to come good, right? Mm. And they picked Callum Afoni, Dave Denton, Mapapalangi, Mike Williams, even someone like Fitzgerald as a lock/6.
Guy Thompson. Guy Thompson's
the only one that I really like.
Guy Thompson is... But of all of those, they were kind of hoping that one would turn into the kind of explosive, maybe a Henry Tuilagi type ball carrier, and none of them have.
Yep.
And whether that's whether that's because their Type 5 isn't good enough, whether they weren't good enough in the first place. But it's like they've rolled that money ball dice and tried to be smart. Not worked.
Do you know who spotted a player that would have just completely changed Leicester's team?
Was it you watching the Ireland under-21s? Was it Olsen Delan or someone?
Richard Cockerill getting in Bill Matter. Richard Cockerill knows what's happening, doesn't he? I wonder what he is, but I don't know actually if he brought him in.
Well, I mean, we can find out very very shortly.
Probably, we can. We've got a special guest in a minute, but not Richard Cockerill, unfortunately, because I'd love to chat to him. But what must he be making of this? And what must Leicester fans be thinking of this?
You know, I think Leicester they're yearning for a reunion with either Dean Richards or Richard Cockerill. That's what I think. Dean Richards strikes me as the guy. But apparently he won't go back until... Is it Tom? What's his name? The chairman?
I don't know.
It's him who is the block for Dino going back.
Peter Wheeler was the chairman or is the chairman?
I think Tom's.
I don't know anything about the internal politics. And
what? It's like Game of Thrones over at Tigers.
One thing we do know about the internal politics is that they want a coach who is a Leicester coach. As in, he's been at the club, knows the club. That's why they employed Matt O'Connor however many times they employed Matt O'Connor.
I think at that
they
time...
They kept going back.
Yeah, I think at that point, that's when you need to get fired, really. I mean, I'm not a big fan of saying that. You just fire, senior management. But I think at that point, when you've been through... you've got rid of two... What turns out to be bloody good coaches. So you've got Cockerill and you've got Major.
Major.
Two great coaches in their own right. You mix them, it's like mixing oil and water. So then you ruin two great coaches. You replace those guys with a guy who just was not cut out for the role in any way, shape or form.
I mean, you can sometimes, like, you know...
Is it easier in hindsight,
olive oil and balsamic vinegar, you know, don't mix. But they're very complimentary.
Now, that is true, actually, Tim. That is very, very, very true. It makes me doubt my judgment for the first time ever.
but relegation is a serious possibility.
No, it's not. They'll just ring fence. If Leicester go down, they've got too much political clout.
Still, when I'm wargaming it out, I still think Worcester... I mean, but I thought that before the week. Worcester could...
Tim, can I borrow your cable, please?
You already have.
The one which I replaced it with.
Yeah, sure. Thank you. I still think Worcester are favourites to go down, even though they've got the points on the board over Newcastle. Just when you look at the run-ins, but then... Worcester went and won on the road in Bristol. Bristol could get sucked into it. Wasps could theoretically even get sucked into it.
Yeah.
The record number of points for anyone that's gone down before is 38, but that doesn't look like it's going to be enough this time.
Oh, it's mad, isn't it?
Well, the Worcester game, if we touch on that very briefly, was interesting.
Peak TO, BBT's back.
Well, the Worcester Warriors getting their international boys back. Josh Adams scores, Ben Teo scores, England international Ted Hill scores.
Yep.
Very, very interesting for them to sneak this victory. Yeah. And it was the early onslaught from Worcester. They scored pretty much all their points, apart from one penalty. All their points were in the first half, and they built up a lead and held it.
Yeah, fair play.
Did anyone watch the Bath Exeter game today? In fact, you worked the Sale game, didn't you?
Worked the Sale game and the Friday night game. Yeah, Northampton Leicester.
All right, Northampton. Did you watch Bath?
Yeah.
So I've got a few things to say about Bath. If anyone's interested in a few things I've got to say about them.
Okay.
Go on.
Oh, by the way, just at the other end of the table. So before we move on from that, just the general state of the table. Exeter have now qualified for the quarterfinals with five rounds to go, which is the earliest anyone's ever done that. And it just goes to show, and why would you want to get rid of relegation? Because what would we be talking about, and who would care right
now?
We'd
find something to talk about.
I mean, yeah, we've got Europe this weekend you can get excited about, and in another couple of months we could get excited about the playoffs, or 6 weeks or whatever, we can get excited about the playoffs, but who would care about dissecting the weekend's games just gone with... I mean, because really there would be the race for top four, top six.
No,
you're struggling to find the storylines that make you care.
It's tricky, isn't it? It's tricky. How about we do it this way? We ring fence, okay? And you have 13 teams. The thing is, if you get relegated, your whole club has to sit out of the competition for an entire year. So it's still ring-fenced. You can still come back in, but your stadium stays empty. You close down the club shop. No one's allowed to come into work.
I'm up for ring-fencing the Championship and the Premiership and trying to grow. And that is basically below Championship. There's just no... Then they wouldn't even bother with semi-pro rugby. It's like just...
But I honestly think... We should not be. I think English rugby could do with a restructure. And again, this is one of the those things which everyone thinks I'm a little bit mad for saying. I'm not even sure there should be any money after the Premiership. I think it should sort of regionalise, and then everyone plays regional games because maybe the Championship. But if you think about below the Championship, where you were playing when you were at Manchester, it takes so much effort for really good players.
And Newbury, don't forget my hometown club as well.
Newbury, yeah. Did someone coach you there who's famous?
Keith Richardson, former Welsh coach.
No, I'm not thinking. It's not him. Not him. I'm thinking of.
Ben Ryan.
Oh, Ben Ryan. Yes, Ben Ryan. So, if you think about your situation or your situation, Phil, if you wanted to go and play a game, depending where it was, that could be your whole weekend written off. Now, it's okay if you're 25 or something with no family, but as you get older and you still want to be in the game, you can't really commit to that unless you put some money into it. So, I actually think regionalising rugby much higher up the game would be far, far healthier. And you actually get proper games that people care about.
I would certainly be... I think there should be a cut-off for where clubs can pay. Now it's never going to happen because you'd have to start auditing clubs like the salary cap. But I think beyond about level... maybe level four. Paying beyond level four, I think, is ridiculous.
Oh, that's nonsense.
Well, but I know guys now who are playing level five or even lower... who are picking up fairly handy, like considerable sums to supplement other jobs.
Yeah, that's not any of our business how individuals want to spend their money. If they want to spend it on rugby players, that's fine.
Yeah, yeah. But I think the point is, I just don't think you need to
spend it. You're socialist, Phil.
Yeah.
You're on your Brexit mark and now trying to bring in socialism as well.
Joke. It's a joke.
You got FBPE on your Twitter account that you lurk on?
No, you know my Twitter account, Tim. It's very, very private.
Very private.
I might be sliding into some DMs soon.
Hashtag JC4PM.
Exactly. if you regionalised it, like you'd get big clubs, the Manchester when they were back in the day, or Sedgwick.
When they were big, yeah.
Yeah, or whoever it is, playing other locally big clubs. And then you think,
Manchester v Preston Grasshoppers, v Waterloo.
It'd be brilliant. Yeah. Like it would be really, really good, and also bring a bit of kudos back to the National Cup because I would care then.
I do, yeah. God, I will say when I was playing a National One, going to play an away game in like Barking, and you just get the bus down, arrive at Manchester Rugby Club, park your car in the car park, get on the bus at 6:30 a.m. You don't get back till 1 a.m. the next day, and for 80 minutes of rugby,
yeah.
Red Roof or Cornish Pirates.
I mean,
away.
Lovely part or of the world, Lawrence. But you don't want to go. You don't. It's just when you've got a job and family and all the rest of it.
Oh yeah, and I'll add the kicker. You're on the bench and it's not interchanges.
Oh man, what was it?
Well, it would start. I've done multiple trips down to Redruth and Launceston that started at midday on a Friday.
Oh God, I know.
So you'd have to get the afternoon off work to get to Sedgley at midday, 1 o'clock on a Friday, and then spend 8-9 hours in Friday afternoon rush hour traffic.
Yeah, and for to get what down goal? To a hotel. An extra £8,000 a year. You're not after the European Cup. that's why I think you should all be regionalised.
A lot less than that at times as well.
But to bring it back, this is why I don't want ring fencing. Long may promotion relegation continue, and that let's hope there's nothing cynical happens. If
they're not losing Leicester Tigers, mate, they're not losing Leicester Tigers.
Well, I mean, this is one way you could. I mean, it was Steve Parrott on Twitter, who, by the way, takes control of Exeter Chiefs' Twitter account on match days and is very, very good value. He put the Exeter team up as starters and put the lineup, and then he put, what was it, fairy dust sprinklers. Some people have said finishers. His was fairy dust sprinklers was the bench. But
non-starters.
But he said they have been looking at ways to try and, you know, get a bit more money into the championship. Leicester Tigers going down would be one way to do that.
Goodness, it'd be amazing. I mean, just their travelling fans. You know, these things, I know no Leicester Tigers fan on earth wants to experience going down. But these things do actually have an impact on fans. I interviewed Bruce Brehana, right? And obviously, one of the most interesting things for me is he stayed with the club when they went down.
Yeah.
And Carlos Spencer signed.
Will Greenwood stayed with Quinns.
Yeah, and I bet the Northampton fans and the Quinns fans that stuck with them when they went to the championship and went all up and down the country to these minor grounds, but they had a whale of a time. Now, again, Leicester Tiger fans, I'm not saying this is what you want. You want to win the European Cup. That's not going to happen. But, you know... Yeah, I don't know. It's hard, isn't it? Because
every club
don't exactly struggle for club identity, do they?
Seeing like Leicester v Nottingham local derby at Lady Bay, where Nottingham currently play, would be amazing. Because they have old fashioned the actual roped off round the edge of the
nice.
Pitch. It'd be like that'd be so good seeing Leicester Tigers there. I don't want any particular team to go down, but
I want the worst team in the competition to go down.
Yes, exactly. That's what, over 22 games. It is a meritocracy,
exactly,
so
right.
you are where you deserve to be.
Oh God, it's exciting.
It really is.
Yes, Bath Exeter.
Yes.
So here's something for you. Do you think Bath are basically like England?
I hadn't thought of it before.
Okay,
but go on.
Well, in terms of how they're built and the composition of the team, they strike me as they play a fairly similar way. They're pretty brutal. They're very good up front. They've got a reasonably good set piece. They love a big ball carrier up the middle. And when they get it right, like they did at the start of the Exeter game, I thought they were brilliant at times. They were really, really good. Oh, and there's also Joe Cock and a singer on the wing who they massively overrate. So there are parallels to England. But then they let it slip. And I think when you answer what Bath have with a bit more, you know, a bit of aggression, you get parity with them, they just fall to pieces.
And that's exactly like England as well, is what you're saying.
The whole thing is like England, yeah. I mean, they're just built around big ball carriers. When it goes well, it really goes well. They're
great.
A nightmare to play against, but actually they're not that effective.
Fantastic.
So
chess pieces.
Yeah.
Not always played as they should.
Mm. So who would you compare, Jay, who do you compare Exeter to then?
I don't know is the answer. Saracens would be the obvious one. I tell you what, there are flashes of George Ford out of Simmons today. The way he shapes for that pass.
No, but nationally, yeah. Internationally, would you say Exeter are like New Zealand?
Ireland would be my thing.
You like Ireland, yeah?
Very, 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 very structured. Do the basics well. Tighten up when they need to be.
Massive power game. They are ferocious.
They are, aren't they? I honestly thought that Bath were going to do them today. I looked at the team sheet and I was like, Jamie Roberts gets over the line. Their bench is awesome. They've got Underhill coming back to slam people. And he did slam someone. You know, they've just got a lot of weapons there. Abano's back in, which is great to see. Turns out it didn't work out quite according to plan.
You should have learned that it's Exeter Chiefs at home.
Yeah.
They look so good.
So, even though I did, you know, McConaughey, how do you say his name?
Yeah, Rory McConaughey.
How old is he? Where's he from?
England Sevens player.
England Sevens, 20, yeah.
25, something like that.
He's electric. He's absolutely...
Maybe slightly older, even.
Might even be, yeah.
But really?
Yeah.
I mean, he is so good.
First season
back
in
he played
in
so well.
Yeah.
Let me raise this controversial question. Where are we with Joe Cocknessinger? Not as an international. I think we all agree on him there.
You're so reactive.
Am I?
He has one average game.
Hang on. Is this the first time I've mentioned Joe Cocknessinger?
I remember after the Italy game, I think Phil and I can't remember what you said exactly, but I know Phil and I said, oh, he had a really good game, would definitely not pick him for the Scotland match. I would go with Jack Noel over him, and if everyone was available, maybe even there's other players that would get in ahead of him.
So we
were, I think we, by that I mean Phil and I were admiring his talents and equally saying there are deficiencies, there are things to work on. He's not the finished article, so we wouldn't have him. And this is at a time when that was a very unfashionable thing to say. People, it was like, he's got. Why is he not playing against Scotland? Yeah.
Well, I started this campaign against Joe Cognacinga. It isn't a campaign against Joe Cognacinga. But like for Irish, I thought the guy is obviously talented, but I just thought the game moved too fast for him when he first broke into the Premiership. And that's not, you know, he's 19 years old. You know, he's doing amazingly well to be playing Premiership rugby at 19 years old. I don't think he's a terrible player. And then when I hear that...
Far from it.
Yeah, exactly. But you look at Lewington on the other wing, and he's killing it. Lewington goes, Saracens is excellent. And I think that Bath have overpaid for him.
No, I'm not. Well,
they paid for his...
Salaries aside, which I don't know, on some big stages in European matches, he has been the man. He has done the business.
He's definitely improved from where he was.
Of his finishing has been amazing.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. He is a good player, but I think Bath have paid for his potential, not what he actually does for them.
Well, that's okay. They're allowed to pay. They're allowed to do that.
Well, they are. Is it a wise move? I mean, if you're a squad member, and this guy's come in on 240, does that unsettle the squad? If that's what he's on, I don't know if he is. Just made it up. You know, if you're McConaughey or...
I don't really understand your point.
I just don't think he's playing well. I think he's overrated. That's exactly what I'm saying.
Okay.
I possibly tend to agree he is overrated, but only because people are comparing him to Jonah Loma.
Yeah, that doesn't help.
Which going back to the Italy game was kind of the main thing I wanted to temper. I think comparing him to Jonah Loma after one good game against Italy is absolutely ludicrous.
Do you know what's amazing? Like, he's a big, strong, powerful guy. And I think that's the other thing as well. He's so big, he's so strong, he's so powerful, and he's fast. You know, those are alluring qualities, and they're easy for people to recognise.
And they're very hard to, like...
Yeah,
you can't teach. You cannot teach that. You cannot teach someone to be 18 stone and run a 10.5 second 100 metres.
Yeah,
you just can't teach that.
He will come good, I'm sure he will. I'm sure, actually, in the long term, when you look at what Bath paid for him, you're like, okay, yeah, maybe it works. But at the moment, he isn't doing that.
Yeah. I still think he's overrated compared to what he is, because everyone looks at what he could be.
Yeah.
Now, the amazing thing is, he's actually smaller than Jonah Lomu.
Yes.
He's actually smaller.
What?
Yeah.
What?
So he's a big boy.
What?
Right, but like, I think Lomu's like an inch taller and a stone heavier. Like, can you imagine? I mean, like, Cognacinga is a big boy, and imagine
how much bigger is Nairavoro than Lomu?
I don't know, but yeah, I reckon he's obviously.
I think he's about. Yeah, I think Nairavoro might be about a stone heavier.
Yeah,
it depends, because I've seen lots of different listed weights for Nairavoro,
and this sounds,
because I think when you're that big, I think you can fluctuate quite easily, isn't that right, Jay?
And that is absolutely right, mate. it just shows what an amazing athlete Jonah Lomu was. I mean, here's another thing: how big would Jonah Lomu be today? As in, I don't mean like physically, because when you look at him now, you think, oh, that's just like a normal size proportion big bloke, because he was big, but he didn't have the strength and conditioning that these lads have now. So these lads look like super athletes. I reckon he might put on another stone.
Well, possibly more. But I would disagree with you slightly. Obviously, he would be even better conditioned and even better. But that was one of the reasons why he was so good, is because he was well ahead of the game in terms of conditioning.
He was, yeah.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah,
I didn't know that. Well, like,
yeah,
gym work and what have you? Did not know that.
Yeah,
yeah. Because he after retiring from rugby, he actually had a stint in kind of amateur bodybuilding.
We've all been there.
Right, other game. Let's run through the other games, because I've got another 10 Lagunitas I wanted to drink tonight.
Right. Yeah, okay. Well, anyway, it's not about you deciding. We've got a guest we want to get.
Yeah,
on the
actually,
phone.
Phil, you can go. We're going to replace.
What do you want to say quickly? What do you want to say about anything else?
Well, other than my beloved Ulster have taken a few steps to best JB's beloved Benetton.
Yeah, I didn't want to talk about this, but go on then. Hold that thought, because tell us about Ulster. We'll leave the Benetton chat for our next guest.
Well, it's a fairly routine win for Ulster. Bonus point win at home to the Kings. Coetzee coming back and scoring a try is really, really important. He's not played since January. It's very important ahead of next week's almost impossible game.
You might lose by a more respectable margin next week now.
Yes, that's kind of where I am, but very important for Ulster. But Benetton losing away at Connacht, looking like they're edging towards the third spot in Pool A of the Guinness Pro 14. Mm. So that's an important couple of results in the season. Yeah. And Edinburgh winning, well, bonus point win against Leinster.
I told you to look out for my boy John Barkley coming back. He's back, so that's great. Yeah, and the battle in Conference B is on for that third place and fourth place, which will be a playoff, obviously, for the seventh Heineken Cup spot for next year. But that particular pool, Ulster in the mix, Edinburgh in the mix, and Benetton in the mix.
That's all I wanted to say.
All right, enjoy your Langanitas.
Did you see the little scuffle between Danny Kerr and Liam Williams?
I did not.
Oh, yes, I did. Yeah.
It was...
Yes.
It was a weird scuffle. I thought it was very well handled by JP Doyle.
Oh, I've got so much time for JP Doyle, but I actually disagree with you on this one.
I've not seen it, so we can discuss. Go on.
So, Stretzel scores a try in the corner.
Yes.
The rook, so he scores in the right corner. The rook from the left corner that was the kind of the penultimate rook or the last rook before that try. Danny Kerr and Liam Williams both get to their feet as the rook's ended. Kerr pushes Williams and then Williams tackles Kerr off the ball. And then they both get up. There's a bit of pushing. Kerr does quite a nice judo throw on Williams and then a bit more pushing. So it's kind of six of one, half a dozen of the other. But they're both at fault. And JP Doyle, rather than awarding the try, comes back and says, look, what you were doing was stupid. You ignored the touch judge who was trying to stop you. So I'm going for a penalty against both of you. I don't think he needed to sin bin him. That's where I think he probably got it wrong. But because they'd shaken hands by that point. But I thought the rest of it was quite well handled.
I don't agree, actually. I think it had absolutely no material effect on the game whatsoever. It was handbags. Let the boys play. As you say, they shook hands and, so that's the kind of incident that I actually kind of... No, it didn't start a mass brawl and a mass scuffle, which sometimes I understand when that happens. You have to go, hold on, what caused that? Let's have a look here. In the way that the referee did in the Newcastle Sale game when he had a look at an alleged bite, that caused a big ruckus. So I understand going and having a look at that. But in this case, it was just two guys, like you say, a little bit of pushing and shoving, nothing too bad. They both ended up getting yellow carded. But what seems strange for me is it ended with Saracens getting a penalty but not getting a try. So I would have preferred try given, have a little word with the two of them going, what are you playing at? Or give the try and go, you two, go and take 10 minutes. But I don't like it was no try, penalty, yellow card.
See, I actually like the no try because even though it didn't have a material effect at all on whether that try would have been scored or not, I think Liam Williams tackling Kerr off the ball was just stupid. So I almost like Saracens receiving, the whole team receiving a penalty because he was stupid.
Yeah, I can see that.
So I'm happy with that. I think the yellow was probably unnecessary because they'd already shaken hands. They were already laughing about it. But if you want to create more space on the pitch, a few more yellows.
Yeah. True that, Phil. Right. Enjoy your Lagunitas.
Thank you very much, gentlemen. Pleasure as always.
See you later, mate.
In a bit.
Oh.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra.
and United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
God, good. And we needed to clear that line.
Yes, we did.
Because in looking ahead to the Champions Cup and Challenge Cup quarterfinals, we have a guest.
Yes, let's see if he picks up the phone. Grant Gilchrist, welcome to the show.
Hi, guys. How are you doing?
Yeah, all good. We're just about to begin a week, which is all building up to an unbelievable weekend of rugby, one of the highlights for which will be your game against Munster. Just a... Where obviously we'll talk about the game you had at the weekend, but just where's the mind at right now, Grant?
It's going to be a huge week for the club. Long time since we've been in a position. I think it's 7 years since the last time we were in the quarterfinals of this tournament. And yeah, I was lucky enough to play 7 years ago at Murrayfield when we beat Toulouse. So you know, it was a really special day, something that stands out in my mind. So. Exciting week.
Right, so have you been there for that long? Are you one of the long? Yeah. You must be like the longest serving player there, or one of.
Well, Fordy's been there a bit longer than me. He'll be into the
course. Yeah.
I wouldn't even want to guess how long Fordy's been there. It feels like forever, but he still looks like a young man to me. But then, yeah. So it's an exciting week. You know, we're going to work really hard. As I'm sure, as we always do with Cockers, but it's a one-off, isn't it? A quarter-final. Hopefully, you know, ticket sales are going really well. So if we can better the crowd than we had last time, you know, I think it was 39,000 last time. So we're looking to hopefully beat that. It'll be really, really special.
And
you know, for a lot of the boys who have never played for Edinburgh in a game with that many fans watching us, so you know, it's going to be really cool.
Last time that you guys were operating in Europe, Bill Matter threw in one particular case an outrageous offload. What's that guy like to train with day in day out? Is he that good continuously?
Yes. game in game out, and day in day out. He's a special talent. I think. Yeah, you know, everybody sees that offload, but the thing that stands out for me, Bill, is how well he carries for us and gets us on the front foot and tight channels as well. Like obviously, he has the Fijian magic in him, but I think if you watch him regularly for us, he's such a vital player. You know, he gets us. You know, you can run into a brick wall and make 5-10 yards, and it gets you on the front foot, and it's that kind of those kind of carries that are vital in getting your game going. So, we love them a bit.
In terms of training as well, I'm imagining, I can't imagine how annoying Darcy Graham must be in a game of warm-up touch.
Yeah, I'd stay far away from him. He's got far too naughty feet to be anywhere near me. I wouldn't want to defend him.
And the one thing I really did want to ask you as well, Grant, is obviously you were delighted. You got yourself a home quarter-final. After a brilliant pool campaign in a really, really tough group. And how much did it take the shine off that by qualifying in that way, you also snuck Glasgow in through the back door?
We've got a good rival with Glasgow, so we don't like to give them too much, but I think on this occasion it's really good for Scottish rugby to have two teams in the quarterfinal is massive. So it's about the bigger picture, but then you know, when we play them in a few weeks time, we won't be looking to do them any favours then, that's for sure.
I mean, what you're effectively saying is you were happy to do a charitable favour to your feeder club. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, we'll help them out, you know. Hopefully they'll return the favour at some point.
Excellent.
I want to hear your thoughts on Richard Cockerell then, because obviously it's a whole team effort and a whole, you know, there's a whole coaching staff and there's a bigger picture cause with a close connection with the Scottish and everything that Greg is doing there. But just on the man, Richard Cockerell, how have you found him?
I've been he's been exactly what the clubs needed. He was probably exactly what I needed. You know, I'd come back from a couple of years of tough injuries and a year where I didn't really find my form. And, you know, a guy who's first and foremost a really good rugby coach. Obviously, he gets known for the, you know, his character more than his coaching, but I think that the first thing is, I think this stands out is he's a bloody good rugby coach. But more the culture that he brought in suited the group of players we had, the position the club was in, and you know, we've pretty simple, there's a pretty simple mindset under Cocker's. You work really hard, you turn up physically on the weekends, and we look to get better week in, week out, and that's about it. You know, as long as you keep your head down, keep grafting hard, then he won't have too much to say. But if he thinks that you're, you know, slipping off or being a bit soft, then you can imagine the kind of treatment that you get, which is not ideal. But you know, it keeps us on the right track. And I think, yeah, you've seen by our results, you see by the way we're playing, it's working. And yeah, so I think that sums up pretty well.
Can I make a recommendation? In fact, look, I should ask if any of you have any of the guys read his autobiography?
I haven't, no.
Can I recommend you do that? Because, I mean, you'll know the mind of the man, but it's amazing. There's things like, I can't remember, what player was it? I can't remember which hooker he was playing against. But he basically says, I really respected this hooker, but then he saw me at the bottom of a ruck and he didn't take a cheap shot and stamp on me, so I can't respect him anymore. I love his confrontational mentality, and yeah, that definitely comes through in through onto the pitch. JB, you were going to ask Grant some of these.
Yeah, are you boys allowed to play music in the gym yet?
In the gym, yeah, we had to win a game, a competitive game, so pre-season games didn't count. So it was a long pre-season in a silent gym, but you know, that's good for the mentality.
So you had to do it all pre-season silently.
Yeah, we had to earn it. So in the first season, we had to earn the chance to get some tunes in the gym. So when we got that first win, you know, morale was boosted hugely. And then it came to the second pre-season. I think boys just assumed that we'll get tunes in the gym from day one. But now it was back to, you know,
that's awesome.
Same again. You know, you've got to earn it. So the sound.
And who's
the sound of silence in the gym?
Who's team DJ? Who's team DJ?
I don't even know. Usually Sean Kennedy would be one that usually gets the tunes on. I can remember, but I think in the gym at Murrayfield, we've got like a sound system thing that's hooked up all the time, so boys can just go and put whatever they want on.
What do you guys listen to? I guess it's lots of Texas, Bay City Rollers. I mean,
there's a lot of Scottish stuff. Yeah, Proclaimers as well. Yeah, that's all we listen to.
Stacks up.
These young rugby players now, though, with like, I bet you have to listen to loads of mumble rap and stuff like that, don't you?
Rubbish.
Now and again, it starts to. Right. Yeah, I get a bit. It's varied. I think that would be one thing you say.
Glad to hear it. Now, we'll get on to Munster in a second, but just briefly, I was absolutely delighted to see your man John Barkley back.
You love John Barkley too much.
I absolutely love him. Got a man crush on the guy. He's one of the nicest men in rugby. So, you know, fantastic to see him back in a World Cup year and at a really crucial time because, you know, Europe aside, You've got a battle on in the Pro 14.
Yeah, we've got a huge battle on. It's great to have John back. He's you know, he was our biggest signing last season, and obviously his injury is what it was. It was a horrible one, and you know, he's had to work really hard. We've seen him, you know, grafting away. Him and one of the strength and conditioning, the kind of rehab coach, you just seen him with him, you know, almost day in, day out. Grafting in the gym, getting the Achilles right, so knowing what he's been through to then seeing him on the pitch again on Friday night was awesome. So you know, I was delighted for him. He played really well as you know, you'd expect somebody to be a little bit rusty, but I thought he played really well. And you know, somebody his experience and his ability at this time of the year is going to be great for us. It's almost like getting a new signing for the kind of last four games of the season, which, like you said, we're in a right battle, and our pool is so tight. You know, there's four of us, and two are going to get the playoff spots, and our running is, yeah, you know, Scarlett's Ulster, Glasgow is not the easiest running, so we're going to need to be at our very best in every game. You know, we've obviously got the big quarter final this weekend, but you know, the week after that we go away to Scarlett's, and it's arguably just as big. So
yeah, I mean,
it's certainly, you know, we're going to need everyone in the squad, and to have John back is going to help that.
Yeah, 100%. And obviously, some teams would be in a position where they're able to rest and rotate with the Europe. You've got yourself and Stuart McAnally that can come back in and vie for contention as well. But yeah, you had to get that win against Leinster, a fantastic win. Also against Irish opposition. Where do you think the key battleground is? Where do you think the game's going to be won or lost come Saturday?
Up front against Munster, you know, we know the way that Munster like to play. You know, they've got a strong forward pack, and they'll look to dominate up front, and they've got, you know, one of the best nines in the world, Conor Murray, who kicks well, and they chase well, and they put you under pressure. And if you exit poorly, or if you get done in up front, then you're going to lose the game. So I think, yeah, from that point of view, it's pretty clear they're not too dissimilar to the way we play. Actually, you know, we've got a good pack, and we exit well and use Henry. Box kicking game to put pressure on opposition, and Munster play quite similarly. So I see it being a bit of an arm wrestle, but both teams will be looking to get on top of that. And whoever does in the front five or in the pack as a whole will win the game, I reckon.
Grant, in pre-season, when the team gets together and they put together their goal setting and where you expect to be. What was your ambition for Europe? Was it quarters? Was it semi? Or have you actually exceeded that yet?
Under Cocker's, it was probably the first time that where the coach had just said, "I don't want to say where we're going to end up at the end of the year." So we've never set a target. We set a target to prepare the best of our ability every week, so to train hard and prepare well and to try and win every game that we're in and see where it takes us. So we've never as a group sat down and said, you know, we want to be in the semi, we want to be in the quarters. Our mindset has just been to try and win every game that we're involved in and see where it takes us. So, and it, you know, to be fair, it's been a good mindset for the club and for the boys to be, you know, we're not thinking too far ahead. We just look at every game and, you know, take it as it comes, train hard in the week and try and get the win on the Friday or the Saturday.
Yeah, because I am kind of amazed when I hear about teams' goal setting and the goals are like a semi-final of a cup. Well, why not the actual cup or like top four? Well, why not top two?
Yeah, well, like you say, it's about being realistic as well. Mm. You know, Cocker's was... So the first year, you know, he didn't want to say anything because he didn't know how well we were going to do. So he just wanted, rather than making something up on the spot and just coming up with something for the sake of it, it was more, well, you know, we can make sure that we prepare properly every week and play our best rugby. And if we win on Saturday, then great. And if we don't, then we need to work hard the next week. And, you know, it's been more about the mindset than looking too far into the results. And I think, certainly from my perspective, it's been quite refreshing to not have that, you know, we're gonna do this, we're going to do that. Obviously, we put pressure on ourselves to do well, but at the same time, it's been more on a week-to-week basis rather than looking at, you know, a block of games or a season-wide goal.
All right, well, I've just got two more questions for you. I warn you, they're pretty heavy. First of all, just give me a quick prediction of how you think the game will go on the weekend.
I'd like to think we'll win, so any kind of win I'll be happy with, but do you want me to give you a number?
Give me some numbers, go on.
I'll say it'll be close, so 18, 18-12.
Excellent. 18-12. I will take that to the bank. Now
I'm so looking forward to this game.
Yeah,
I really
am. I can't wait. It's going to be dynamite.
which I think that says everything about where Edinburgh have got themselves and the incredible job that everyone's done as a squad. That I look at all of the games. That's one of the ones I'm most excited about.
Yeah, I completely
agree. Can't wait.
And the last question for you, and I warn you, this is quite heavy. Like we do a lot of our, well, we do all of our recording on a Sunday, which is difficult because when we try and get a rugby player in, they're often out for dinner. It's a last chance to get a cheap meal in before they're back onto rice and chicken for the rest of the week. So, what was your dinner this evening?
What was the dinner tonight? My wife cooked me a lovely Sunday roast, so I was treated. I've just moved house, so we've just sorted our kitchen out this afternoon. So we. Just a nice roast chicken, Yorkshire puddings as well. So that was my Sunday.
Good man.
Excellent. Tim, you got anything else for Grant?
No, just go well. Go well and give my love to John Barkley. Love that guy. Absolutely love that guy. I love Cockers as well. I miss Cockers from... I do some of the work on BT Sports. So it's nice the European weekends because occasionally you bump into Cockers and he's always an absolute... pleasure. And what I love about him so much, actually, which is for someone who's from such like salt of the earth, working class roots, he's like an unbelievably intelligent, articulate guy. I can't remember what was the job he did before.
Scaffolder
or something, wasn't it? Yeah. Just I think his rugby intellect's amazing. So go well. All the very best, Grant. Yeah, thanks for your time.
Thanks very much. No worries at all.
Cheers, mate. Bye bye.
Cheers, man.
I'm so excited about that game.
It's going to be a quality game. So now that Edinburgh have guaranteed themselves an 18-12 win, guaranteed, so Philip, your best passing account.
Well, let's look at the other Scottish match then, because it is, Edinburgh are at home to Munster. I do think Edinburgh will win this.
I completely agree with you. I'm not just saying that. I mean, if you saw how they competed in the pool matches, they're absolutely quality. Against some big teams, they had Toulon, they had Glasgow... Glasgow. Montpellier. Yeah. I'm basically going with Edinburgh.
And I think let's look at Glasgow then. I think they can. I don't think they will. I predict Saracens will win, but I think Glasgow have definitely got a win in them at Saracens.
I think they definitely haven't, I'm afraid. I think Saracens will crush them. Yeah. I'd like to be with you on that, on the feel good Scottish feeling. But no, I don't see it.
It's more that I don't think Saracens haven't really sparked yet in the way, and this is business time when Saracens normally the cogs start cranking. And was it 2 years ago they played Glasgow in a quarter final and just blew them away,
smashed them,
absolutely
like first half,
demolished them.
And there's a big travelling crowd. I wonder if that will make a difference, because I would say that Glasgow team then, when they were coming down with Finn Russell and all their stars, that's when they really felt... I mean, they might have even been Pro 14 champions at the time. And that's when I think that they felt they had a really good chance. I do not think that this version of Glasgow is as good as that version of Glasgow. And with that in their mind, it's going to be very difficult for them.
Well, no, actually, it's because they've played Saracens so much. Obviously, had them in the pool stages. Was it? They had them in this pool stages. Just gone, didn't they? Was that last year?
They definitely had them in the pool stage, and these pool stages seem to just emerge in.
Yeah, anyway. So they've played, I think, because Glasgow have played them quite a lot, and they've got a lot of, I think, the sort of aura of Saracens will have been broken down. And I think, I don't think they will win, but I think this is going to be a lot closer than people are kind of thinking. So I'm going to go for Saracens narrowly, but I think Glasgow, I've just got a funny feeling they're going to put in a really amazing performance. So we've got 12:45 on Saturday, Edinburgh Munster, 3:15 on Saturday, Saracens Glasgow. So we're both saying two home wins there, and it's going to be a home win for Leinster against Ulster. I think this will be the
that's going to be a big score potentially, isn't it?
Yeah, Leinster have rested all their guys because, unlike we just spoke to Grant there from Edinburgh, they had to play a load of their guys because they have to. If they want to get qualified for the European Cup next year, they either have to win the tournament or they have to pick up their league form. So, yeah, I do think Leinster will win comfortably against Ulster. Comfortably in the context of a quarter-final, because it's not going to be easy. And then on Sunday, you have Racing versus Toulouse.
I don't know. All I know is it's two teams who are bloody superb with loads of great players that should be superb. And for some reason, when you combine both the teams into the French team, they're absolutely useless. So I have no idea. I have no idea. I like how Racing play. There again, I'd love to lose this year also. I
Racing in their dystopian...
Nightmare.
Bowl.
Post-global warming, post-apocalyptic bowl. Racing, the home different home advantage teams that make a bigger difference to French teams.
So it's going to be...
Is Machinode back yet? Because I've seen him on the bench a few times.
Well, I guess he is then.
Mm. Or are they sticking with the lad with the slightly Spanish name who I forget? But anyway, the point being I'd love to see a Dupont versus Machinode game. That's a matchup that I look forward to. Mm. Oh, and actually, carrying on with the Scottish theme, I'm going to go for Racing purely because I've got Finn Russell.
Yeah, I'll go with you on that. And that Saturday, there's four games. It's so good. Because if you factor in...
Why have they done that?
If you factor in the Challenge Cup, you've got one game Friday night. I will be working at this one. And obviously start...
Oh, I'm working this one too.
Oh, there you go. Start the weekend as you mean to go on. Just wall-to-wall rugby. Friday night, 7:45 kickoff. Sale versus Connacht in the Challenge Cup quarterfinal. Two teams that played each other home and away in the pool stages. Both got a win.
Yeah.
So... I fancy Sale in this one, but Connacht Connacht have been doing really well. Although Sale have been without AJ McGinty, and that Sam James is a really great player.
He's not AJ McGinty though, is he?
But he's not AJ McGinty.
Agreed.
So,
so this is interesting. So I'm going to plug this. I am doing basically your job on a very very low level, kind of way, not low level, but just a different level. I'm doing it for the Sale Sharks Facebook Live. So I'll be, if you watch Facebook Live about an hour before the game, I'm doing an interview with Simon Orange, I think, Steve Diamond, got Jono Ross, I've got someone else as well whose name is...
Can you not upset Steve Diamond too much?
Yeah. Well, just, I'm going to... I'll see what I can do. And then as soon as you
soften him up a little bit for me.
And literally as soon as we finish with the Facebook Live on our side, with Sale Sharks, we finish it because BT Sport goes live. So you can then click off us, tune into Tim,
there you go.
And away you go.
So we'll have to get Phil to do so. What can Phil do?
I don't know.
If you can find his Twitter account that he lurks on, you can go and have a little fix of Phil on Friday as well.
Oh, do you know what else that we've got to do?
What?
Tell everyone about the Egg Chasers store.
We'll do that in a second. So Sale, I think, will sneak it, but it's going to be tight. Sale need to play better than they did. They were looking really good in the first half against Newcastle.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so then on to Saturday, and in the Challenge Cup, the evening kickoff, which I'll also be at, Worcester Harlequins, 8:15 p.m. So you've got a Saturday night match as well. Four games, starting at lunchtime, right through till... Well, I was going to say bedtime, but 10 o'clock's not bedtime, is it? But you know what I mean.
Close enough.
Worcester v Harlequins. I don't know what teams they're going to put out for this one. Worcester may focus on other stuff, but they've got to a quarterfinal and they're at home, so I'd hope they go for it.
I have a feeling they will not put out their full team.
Yeah, I have a feeling they won't either. I hope they do, but I think you may be right. And then on Sunday, you've got La Rochelle-Bristol. Should be lots of fun.
That will be a great game.
I'd love to be at that game because that stadium is so good. So much fun. And then Claremont, Northampton, which is a huge way to finish the weekend, 6 p.m.
And
Sunday.
Those two have got history as well.
Yeah, they do. So that's 6 p.m. on Sunday.
Perfect.
So I think home wins, La Rochelle, Claremont.
I don't like playing all the Champions Cup games in one go. You should have it on Sunday.
So you've got one on Sunday.
Oh, sorry, I thought you said there's four games including the Challenge Cup.
Yes.
Got you. And understood, Timothy.
That is your weekend of rugby. And it should be amazing. Every game, of course. The only place you can get every single game is on BT Sport. All the games.
What a channel.
All of the games.
What professionals.
So, fill your boots. Get that Facebook Live. Yeah, our store where you can get our rugby shirt. No?
No.
No?
No.
Okay, get yourself Cornerstone Razor. Cornerstone.co.uk/eggchasers. Cornerstone.co.uk/eggchasers or...
Egg 10 at checkouts.
Right, let the boys play.
Let the boys play.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.